Just before I begin, I'd like to thank everyone who made this project possible, my field technician, my lab members, and those who provided other support and funding. Now, when one thinks of an arthropod community, one can imagine a variety of factors that contribute to its structure or its species composition, such as abiotic factors like nutrients, light availability or temperature, or biotic factors like competition, parasitism, and predation. It's also important to remember that space and time may structure...
Good morning, everyone. We grow two types of blueberries commercially in Florida. The Rabbit Eye cultivar is grown mainly for U-pick and local sales operations, whereas the Southern Highbush, which is a cross between Northern Highbush blueberries and several Florida species, including the Rabbit Eye, is grown for a highly profitable early season fresh market. In 2006, 7 million pounds of blueberries were harvested from 2,600 acres at an average of $4.70 a pound. This can get up around $6 a pound, and this is compared to about $1 to $2 in most of the rest of the country, with Georgia and Florida getting around $2 to $3 because they are also able to get some of this early season market. Now, flower thrips are a pest of blueberries throughout their range in the United States, and they're a key pest of blueberries in Florida. And about 90% of the thrips captured in Florida blueberries are Franklin yellow bispinosa, the Florida flower thrips. They're about 1 millimeter in length, yellowish to orangish in color, with bristle-like wings and what the literature has come to call punch and suck mouth parts, because they have a single mandible that they use to puncture the leaf tissue or the flower tissue, and then their maxillary stylets are modified into a feeding tube that they use to then suck out the contents of the plants. And they have a very wide host range, both feeding hosts and reproductive hosts, and blueberries are reproductive hosts. And so thrips injure them both by feeding on them and laying eggs in the tissue. And when they lay them in the ovary tissues of the flowers, this can be magnified when the fruit develops, as you can see here from this feeding damage, and also these spots of oviposition damage. The oviposition damage in this case isn't as severe as this feeding damage, but you can see if there was a lot of this, that would also be a problem. Now, thrips are mainly controlled through applications of insecticides at this time, and Malathion is the conventional insecticide of choice until recently, and that is being replaced by Spintor, which is a reduced risk insecticide that is much less toxic to the bees that are important in the pollination of the blueberries. But an economic threshold has not yet been determined, and this is a big objective of my research. So the objectives of this initial stage were to investigate varietal susceptibility in southern highbush blueberries, to quantify the relationship between thrips numbers and fruit injury, and to quantify the relationship between thrips per trap and thrips per flower. So the methods were done on two farms in Hernando County, Florida, with four varieties of the southern highbush blueberry: Emerald, Jewel, Millennia, and Windsor, which are four of the most popular varieties being grown right now, with 9 plants sampled from each variety per farm for a total of 18, in a completely randomized design. I used 2 different sampling methods, white sticky traps, and there were a total of 36 traps per farm, which were changed out weekly, and flower samples, where I collected 5 flowers weekly from the plant where the sticky trap was hung, and these flowers were gently dissected back in the laboratory. Fruit injury was assessed when the fruits were green before they'd started to ripen, because it's much easier to see the injury in this case, and 25 fruits were collected from 4 plants adjacent to the sticky trap, so this was 100 per sample and 900 per variety on each farm. And these were examined for injury and marketability. So as I said, my first objective was to examine varietal susceptibility, the hypothesis being that different varieties with varying characteristics will attract different numbers of thrips, which will cause different levels of injury. And this was important because I needed to know whether I had to look at the variety separately for economic injury levels and thresholds, or if I could put them together. My statistics for this first part was fairly straightforward. I used an analysis of variance with SAS and separated the means using an LSD if the ANOVA was significant, but I did have to do some transformations to normalize my data. The sticky trap and fruit injury data was transformed using a log base 10 transformation, and the flower data was transformed using the inverse of the square root. So this graph shows the thrips per sticky trap on farm 1. You can see thrips per trap here and my varieties down here on the x-axis. You see we had a lot of thrips on this farm, and the emerald variety had significantly higher numbers of thrips than all of these other three. Windsor also had significantly higher than Millennium, but it wasn't nearly the difference as this emerald variety. And this is showing the average thrips per flower. The light ones are the adults and the dark ones are the larvae. And you can see again, emerald had significantly higher numbers of thrips adults per flowers than all of the others, with Millennium here having significantly fewer than both Jewel and Windsor. With the larvae, there were no significant differences overall, although on my second week of sampling, Jewel had significantly higher numbers than the others. And this shows the fruit injury, and you can see the total fruit injury in the light blue bars and the actual unmarketable portion of that in the purple bars, and you can see there's no significant differences in either, although the emerald did have numerically higher than the others. This looks at the thrips per trap on farm 2. You can see there were a lot less thrips on this farm. And again, emerald had significantly higher than the other three, and this time Windsor actually had significantly fewer than Jewel and Millennia. With thrips per flower, we can see the adults again in the light orange with no significant differences. With the larvae overall, emerald had significantly higher numbers than Millennium and Windsor, with Jewel also having significantly higher than Millennium. But with this particular thrips per flower, this actually varied a lot throughout my sampling weeks. And again, there were no significant differences in fruit injury. And you can see there was a lot less unmarketable fruit on this farm. So my next objective was to quantify the relationship between thrips numbers and fruit injury. And since it did look like there were some differences in the varieties, I did this separately for each variety. The hypothesis being that there's a positive linear relationship and correlation between thrips per flower and fruit injury. Now, for this, I used non-parametric statistics because I looked at thrips per flower versus the proportion of injured fruit, and proportion data is, by its nature, not normally distributed. So I used the non-parametric regression Thiel statistic C, which is the measure of the slope. It tells you, is the slope equal to zero, or is there a linear relationship? And the Spearman correlation statistic, which is simply the non-parametric measure of correlation. So this is my graph for the emerald variety. You can see the equation up here with a slope of around 0.2 and the Thiel regression line. And we had a significant Thiel statistic C of 63 and also significant correlation statistic RS of 0.63. This is the same graph showing the Jewel variety. You can see the slope was a lot less for this, but it was still significant. The C of 54 and the correlation statistic of 0.48 was also significant. The Millennia variety again had a slope of around 0.2, this one closer to 0.3, with a significant correlation statistic of 0.43. The C statistic, the Thiel statistic, was borderlining on significance, I think the biggest reason probably being these two outliers up here. And this was for the Windsor variety. Again, we have a slope of around 0.2, and again, a significant Thiel statistic and the RS correlation statistic as well of 0.45. Now, my final objective was to quantify the relationship between thrips per trap and thrips per flower, and this is important because it's a lot easier for the growers to monitor their thrips using white sticky traps than it is to dissect flowers, which is very time consuming. And the hypothesis here is also that there is a positive linear relationship between thrips per trap and thrips per flower. Now, for this, to normalize my data, it was again necessary to use some transformations. For the thrips per sticky trap, I used a log transformation to normalize the data and also get a curve out of it, so it would be a linear relationship. And to normalize the thrips per flower, it was necessary to take the inverse. So that's why this looks like a negative relationship, because I had to take the inverse of the thrips per flower, which you can see here on the y-axis, and this is thrips larvae plus thrips adults. Now, we have thrips per sticky trap down here, and you can see we have a moderately significant correlation here of 0.6 with a very significant p-value, and there are two reasons why this is 0.6. One, I just have a lot of data points, so that lessens your correlation statistic, and also you can see here that the thrips adults are much more highly correlated with the thrips per sticky trap than the larvae up here. So in summary, there were significantly more thrips per trap collected from the emerald variety, but there was no real consistent trend in the thrips larvae or adults per flower among the varieties, and there were no significant differences in numbers of injured or unmarketable fruit. There was a positive linear relationship and correlation between thrips per flower and fruit injury in all four varieties, and a moderately strong linear relationship between the thrips per trap and the thrips per flower, and I'm planning on repeating this again to strengthen some of these relationships and work out some of the varietal differences, hopefully. And these are my acknowledgments. I want to acknowledge my major professor, Dr. Oscar Liebert, my dissertation committees, Dr. Funderburk, McSorley, and Dr. Grunwald, Gary England, who is an extension agent who did a lot of this work, of course, the blueberry growers, my lab mates, and the UFIFIS grant that gave us some of the money for this project. Thank you.
I'm going to talk to you today about a group of moths on a common host plant and some correlates regarding their abundance. So I'm starting with a very commonly observed pattern that you see pretty much whenever you survey biodiversity, enumerate species in a given trophic level. In this case, we plot it with each point is a species. Log scale on the y-axis is the percent of total number of individuals encountered, and they're just put in order of their rank. And the pattern that you see in almost any kind of system, plants, animals, coral reefs, is that a handful of species are very common. In this case, there's four species that are each more than 10% of individuals encountered. And then there's this long tail of very scarce species where most species that you encounter in the system, even if they regularly occur at very low numbers and density. And so there's been a lot of theoretical development about the shape of these curves, how they're put together. Recently, a lot of the theoretical activity has been centered around promoting or arguing against Hubble's neutral theory. But what I'm interested in is looking at this pattern in a group of moths and seeing whether we can determine ecological and life history factors that explain this pattern. So instead of thinking of the species as points, I want to think about their full range of variation in life history and all the ecological interactions that are going on. So from that pattern, the two questions I'm interested in focusing on are if life history and ecological interactions can explain some of the observed abundance patterns, and then how well, in this group of mostly generalist moths, the differential fitness predicts their differential abundance. Just to step back and describe the system a bit, I'm working with, as I said, mostly broadly generalist caterpillars that, in this case, share a host plant, somewhat weedy maple called box elder, Acer negundo. And my advisor, Pedro Barbosa, and his lab group sampled this and some other forest trees very intensively for a number of years to develop a profile of the parasitism rates on different host plants. And what they also did was generate those nice abundance curves that you saw in the beginning. So the purpose of the study I'm talking about today is just to find these ecological or life history traits, if any, that are associated with differential abundance. And to think about what sort of things might be important, you kind of go back to basic population dynamics. And in sort of life table terms, what we're interested in is the growth rate of a population. So that's dependent on their survivorship, their fecundities, and related to their development time as well. And so I'm not doing multiple life table studies for all these different species, but I'm using these same sort of variables and looking at fecundity, relative growth rate on the host plant, and mortality. In this case, the mortality figure, even though we know there's a lot of mortality sources in the field, the one that we're able to have a lot of good data on is the percent parasitism, so that's what I'm using. So to collect the data, I light trapped adult females, collected eggs from both the females and also lab-reared females that were mated. The relative growth rate information was developed by rearing caterpillars from eggs on the host plant in field-like conditions in a growth chamber, changing their leaves every other day. And the actual variable I'm using is simply the change in mass per time, so change in mass per day, corrected for the final mass, because there are very different sizes of these caterpillars, so there has to be a correction for that growth rate. And then finally, the parasitism rates, which were again developed in this long-term survey. Now, in doing this sort of comparative approach and thinking about species as points in a relationship, you can't ignore their shared evolutionary history. So in this case, there's two Acronictus species that are found in the host plant in very different abundances, one very regular and one not. But in considering whether fecundity or growth rate plays into that, it's important to look at their sort of shared evolutionary past. And so to do that, I'm using a method called phylogenetically corrected generalized least squares. Just rolls off the tongue, but that what it does is allow you to incorporate what you know about their evolutionary relationship into the error structure of a statistical model. And so what that looks like is if you take a simple regression model where you've got a response variable, this vector of abundances in this case, you've got an explanatory variable, a set of variables, in this case it's trait information, and then you have an error, which is usually considered residual experimental error, observation error. What the generalized least squares method allows you to do is put some structure, specifically the phylogenetic structure, into that error relationship. So you still have the residual error, but part of the error is explained by that phylogenetic hypothesis. And the goal, of course, is to estimate some kind of relationship. And if all goes well, you'll see a very nice arrangement like this, where abundance is predicted by one of these traits, in this case, fecundity. Hypothetical. Before I show you that relationship, I'll just display some of the variability inherent in the data here. So here on the left is the phylogenetic relationship of many of these species that are in the assemblage. And this was developed from published family and below level phylogenies, and the families were actually put together in relationships that are just coming out from the LEP tree project that Charlie Mitter is running out of Maryland. And you can see that there's a lot of difference in the different fecundities, but another thing to notice is that there are differences in variation as well. So the spread of some of these box plots is much bigger than others. Likewise, with the growth rate information, there seems to be some influence of clade in terms of their growth rates. Geometrids down here, and the arctides up here. So.